All right, what is going on? How's everybody doing? It is America Unplugged, and I'm here with the usual suspects, ladies and gents. Mr. Tony Atterburn, the wisest of all the wolves, where are you?
I'm in Mr. Cooper's neighborhood. I drove to Eager, Arizona to pay tribute, kind of a pilgrimage, you know, yesterday, right around midnight, November 5th, 2001, so 20 years ago, Bill Cooper was killed on his doorstep by the sheriff's department here. And of course that was predicted. You know, he told his audience that would happen. He'd die on his doorstep. He also predicted a lot of other things as we cover, you know, through our shows. And we talked about that yesterday, 9/11. You know, he talked about the digital cash society that we're about to see rolled out with these central bank digital currencies and a whole host of things. And I've been a big fan. That's how I found you, Billy. Right. I was looking for Bill Cooper's show, so I'm paying tribute. We're going to go out and visit his gravestone today and bring in some flowers, and we'll mark that and we'll get some pictures. But yeah, just something I planned for about a year, and I'm honored to be talking to you and Don about that yesterday on the show, and I put that up on the podcast as well in America Unplugged.
Right, an iconic figure. And what it is we do, whether you like him or you hate him, whatever, Bill Cooper is the reason a lot of people are doing this, right? You know,
that's right.
And he did predict 9/11, right? And that you can't take that away from him, short of telling you the date and the time, right? He was as accurate as anybody. Alex Jones gets a lot of props for doing that. Bill Cooper did it first. He would get the props in my book. Regardless, I was put onto all of this because of Behold the Pale Horse, right? Somebody handed me that book when I was 18 years old, and I didn't really know what I was. I knew something was wrong, and that when I was reading that, it confirmed some things for me, and I didn't know. I'm a little under the weather, guys. Just to give you a heads up, if I sound a little bit off or if I look like worse than I typically do. Just giving you a heads up, that's why. But anyway, I had that book and I would go through it and I was like, I knew it. I knew George Bush was a piece of crap. I knew these people got in coffins and did crazy crap. Like, it's just like, I freaking knew it, right? And that book confirmed it for me, even though there are a lot of parts of that book that are wrong. But regardless of that, like, it's, you can't get everything, right? Still, I hold the book close to my heart, right? Because it was a pivotal moment in my life, right? And I never got to see Bill Cooper alive. I never got to experience the hour of the time, which was his show, while he was alive. I never got to do any of that. You know, I started posting some of his shows on my podcast, the Mystery Babylon series.
Right.
I think I got up to 18, and then I had to take everything down due to copyright issues, but not for Bill Cooper. It was for the music that I was using on my podcast. But I took every freaking thing down. I may start putting up the Bill Cooper, the rest of the Babylon series up there, starting from 19 on to the end again for people to listen to. Don Jeffries, what was your relationship with one Mr. Bill Cooper? Did you listen to the hour of the time when it was going and he was alive?
Oh no! I read Behold a Pale Horse before he died. Probably in the 90s, I guess. And certainly, I mean, like you said, there were things like what he was right on a lot of stuff, and he's like Alex Jones, ironically, who he later kind of called out Alex Jones, I think, and said he was his info or something. A lot of people point that out, but both of them have one thing in common: is they both did bring a lot of people into this world. They were responsible for triggering, you know, people questioning things. But that's why I don't criticize Alex Jones that much, because he's, you know, he woke a lot of people up to varying degrees. And before that, Bill Cooper did as well. So I'm not going to quibble with him. But he believes that Bill Greer, the driver of the limousine, was shot JFK. I mean, and some people do. I don't understand how anybody can believe that. But you know, Bill Greer was bad enough and then let it happen. And he stopped the car and didn't accelerate. He was a conspirator. But they certainly would have, I think they would have planned a little better than having the driver turn around and shoot him. But I don't know. A lot of people believe that. Some good people too. So, but nothing's perfect. But and as I pointed out yesterday, he went out. you can't go out in a more appropriate way for any good conspiracy theorist than to be, you know, shot out, you know, die in a shootout with law enforcement. And he did after predicting it. So, yeah, my hat's off to him. He was one of the many, you know, kind of trailblazers, you know, in modern research into these things.
I want to say, Billy, too, just to add to what Don said, you know, I talked yesterday on my podcast and my radio show. Bill Cooper in his life, it's a mixed bag. You know, he was wrong about a lot of things, but on the things he was right about, it's just, I mean, this is like tapping into the divine in a lot of ways. And I think that on a big picture scale, he really was somebody that had transcended in a lot of ways the way we look at reality. I mean, he didn't use drugs or anything like that. He was just, there was something about his mind to perceive this future, you know, that we're in right now. So I think paying tribute to him is pretty easy to do for me. I don't agree with everything he believed. And I didn't find him until, you know, I read Don's book. And that's weird because, you know, as a kid, I remember going and I listened to Bo Greitz speak, you know, at 14 years old. And Bo Greitz made it into Hidden History as well. And I listened to some of the Patriot radio back when I was a teenager in the 90s. So I just didn't know about Bill Cooper until, you know, I started researching more and more into alternative, into conspiracy, and of course reading Don's books, and that just led me to here. So I think it's important that we, you know, we honor those who went before us, and people like Bill who laid the groundwork. And you know, look, I'm not really a fanboy thing, but I feel like there's a connection there that I've had with his work and his life and his radio show. And that inspired me to be on WWCR. And of course I listened to his shows for style and for inspiration, you know, on how to conduct a broadcast. And so it's just, I'm paying tribute just, you know, not because I had to, but because I wanted to. And that of course, has led me to working with you guys.
No, absolutely, man. And you know what, to the fanboy point, like I'm a fanboy. I don't care. I'm cool with it. Like and it's something I loved. Like I wish I was there with you, Tone. Like I really want to get down there. Like I wanted to. It wasn't possible and whatever. Then I got sick, so I'd be sick, sneezing all over you guys right now. What's up, Tone?
Oh, I was gonna say. So let's do this. I know we're live, which is always a great way to experiment, right? But before we end the broadcast, what I'll try to do, I'll leave the stream. And I'll see if I can get my camera set up. And I want to show you guys if I can. It's from my hotel room. I can see Bill Cooper's whole home.
That's so dope. Right.
And okay, when he called it my mountain. It really is kind of a little mountain.
Yeah.
And it overlooks all of Eager. And, you know, it's so when you look at it in real life, when they say they had to go and stage this ruse, you know, to get him to come out of his house and drive down to his driveway. And then it's all these plainclothes police officers. Guys, they didn't have to do that. He went to a Mexican restaurant that literally was like 300 yards from his house. Like you could just wait for him to be in. Same thing with David Koresh, right? Same thing with Ruby Ridge, all that stuff. And they have these dramatic raids and stuff that always leads to somebody getting killed.
They clearly wanted to prove a point.
Yeah, any good sheriff, you know, because I was a military policeman in the Army, and I mean, I would have not raided the house. I mean, who would do that? Like, you've got a warrant. Just wait for that kind of guy who's broadcasting, you know, who's deep into conspiracy and says he's, you know, going to protect himself. Yeah, you don't go to his house, you know. You wait, right, and you go talk to him, and maybe out in public. And so they chose not to do that, and that's again why we're talking about him.
Oh, I understand 100%, man, but I really wanted to get down there. Like, I like going to these places of people that I've read about, right? And it's like having a connection to these people. Like, I went to visit Chris Cornell's grave. Chris Cornell's one of my favorites of all time, right? And I got to see him live many times, you know, with every incarnation, with Audioslave, with Soundgarden by himself. I've seen him. I saw him live about 10 or 15 times. And when he passed away, you know, I went to Florida. I mean, to California to see his grave. I mean, it was a little plaque. I don't know what it is now, and they had like a little bit of his ashes in there or something, supposedly, you know. But I still had to go, you know, because it's a connection, you know, like it was like, damn, that's freaking Chris Cornell in there. So I wanted to do the same thing with Bill Cooper. And I think I will at one point, but I want to put it out there before we move on. If anybody listening right now or anybody listening in the podcast can hook me up some way, shape, or form with an original copy of Behold the Pale Horse, the first edition, I'd be willing to pay some money for that. Okay. I've given away that book about 6 times. I think I had an original at one point and I gave it away to somebody. Then I bought it again and I gave it away to somebody because I want them to read it, right? Or they speak about, oh, I know Behold a Pale Horse or whatever. I'm like, well, I have it here. Take it and do what you will with it. So I have a copy here, but it's like, you know, one of the ones you got on Amazon now that everybody has. I want an OG version.
Yeah, the original. The right. original had, I believe, it had the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion in it too.
Right. I think this one does too, but I think it was in a different capacity. The original was dope. I want one. I can't find one. So if somebody knows, let me know, please. Anyway, Tone, it's dope that you're down there. I hope we get to see. Did you go? You went to eat at the Mexican restaurant too, right?
Yeah, I mean the place where he got enchiladas. And
what'd you have?
I got enchiladas.
Nice.
So I mean, so way I to go. That's apropos. I mean, you guys, you listen to those that are tuning into the show here on Rockfin. I did a show on Rockfin yesterday. I did the regular radio show live on Rockfin, and I added some of the audio to the podcast of me talking to Don while I'm up on Bill Cooper's mountain. All three of us were talking, and I got a little clip from Don. And I think you guys, you listen to the editing. It's really cool the way it worked out. So you made it into the radio broadcast as well.
Dope.
Oh, fantastic. Cool.
Fantastic.
I'm honored.
Hey, I am honored, actually. Listen, my cat's making a cameo here, stepping all over my board. So if you guys hear something, it's him.
If
you guys hear it's time to release the Kraken, he did it. Zeus is here. And, you know, I can only control but so much. He's sitting right in front of me right now. But Don, I want to ask you about this, and then I want to get Tone's opinion on it. So they're saying that October is the month that the jobs came roaring back. Oh my gosh. I mean, there's jobs for every, it's like Oprah, you get a job and everybody has, you know, well-paying freaking, above life standard jobs, right? They're like, you know, everybody's going to be taken care of. That's the way they're making it out to be. I don't believe this shit. Okay. Like, I mean, and call me a conspiracy theorist. That's fine. I am. So call me what you want. I don't believe this crap. I don't believe it. I think they're propping up the numbers. Tell me something, Don. You know a little bit about this. Go ahead.
Well, yes. And, you know, one of the most revolutionary things Donald Trump did during his 2016 campaign was point that out. People like me have been talking about this. You know, the way they calculate unemployment figures was changed in the 1990s during the Clinton years. And it was done, and of course, both parties love doing it because it always paints a rosier picture in reality. Because what they do, they only calculate people who are presently collecting unemployment benefits. And of course, they cut almost all states now. Cut it so where you get the amount for a shorter period of time. Now, of course, at the pandemic and everything, and they kind of extended that and made it a little bit differently. But it makes you wonder when you hear these absurd reports. And of course, once Trump became president, he forgot all of it because he said, you know, hey, these, some people say, you know, they think the employment rate is really 40%, which I've been saying for a long time. And, you know, he caught flack. But then as soon as he became president, he started using the same phony figures to brag. You know, we got an employee, and nobody questioned him. Hey, what happened? I thought you rightly pointed out that these were phony figures. And now, of course, Biden's in there, and you know when it suits them, when they can make up a phony thing like this, where they can claim. I mean, the numbers are irrelevant. Let me say they created so many jobs. Firstly, especially with the shutdown, how many of these jobs are just jobs that were shut down before? There aren't new jobs that are just coming back. And the idea that all these great jobs are out there, and you hear this propaganda from both the left and the right. Now, the Bidens are doing it because they're in power. So, you know, he's coming from the left, but it's his purpose is to brag about, you know, we created jobs. And of course, conservatives continue to say that, oh, so you help wanted signs anywhere, everywhere. You know, people just don't want to stay home and collect all them unemployment benefits. You know, that's their attitude. Right. And how many times you pointed out this absurdness, you know, unemployment benefits for every worker, like I paid into it for 45 years,
right?
And I never collected one penny. So right. There's lots of people like me that never had to, you know, so where did all that money go? We paid into it, it's a benefit. So right. When somebody does collect it, but instead they try to couple it with welfare and so forth. But I think we talked about it on the show last week or the week before. These numbers, by the little experiment the young guy in Florida did recently, where he applied for, I think it was 60 entry-level jobs. These are entry-level jobs. So you know they're not paying big wages. And he got one interview. Wow. And that's what I try to tell people. They say the help wanted signs. The help wanted signs are irrelevant. All businesses pretty much keep up help wanted signs all the time because they want to encourage people to apply. You can't, old people especially are living still in the 1970s or 1980s when you could go walk into businesses and pretty much get hired on the spot. We need help. Can you start today? You know, that can't happen now unless it's the very smallest of businesses, which is very rare, especially now since they close so many of them down and throw them out of business. But for the vast majority of people, even for jobs at Kmart, really low-paying jobs, you have to apply online, and you have to sometimes take a 200-question quiz. Jeez. Psychological niche. I don't know how to pass it. Well, when my kids were young, they used to tell me that, and I said, nah, that can't be true. And they would show it. So one time I tried to take one of the tests for them. Of course, I failed miserably because I don't know what the hell they're asking. What would you do in this situation and that situation? And you don't know. Do they want you to be honest or do they want you to lie? And, you know, I don't know what they're looking for. And neither do they. But it's a way to weed it out. So when they say they're hiring, no, you just put your application in a line. And I guess if you don't have a computer, you don't have the internet, then you go to the library and do it or whatever. But this is completely bogus. And anybody that looks around, and you have statistics from Survival of the Richest, which are even more glaring than they were then. But I mean, I don't know how, with all these fantastic paying jobs out there, and all you got to do, I don't know why the bottom half of America is mired in these horrible jobs that pay $27,000 or less. Yeah. That's what the statistics show, that half of the country is making less than $27,000. And again, that was 2017 or whatever. I'm sure it's not any better. So the numbers are contradicted by reality. Anybody that goes out there, I know from my own experience how few interviews I ever got. That's reality. I read Bad Light Productions and places like that where people talk about their experiences. They can't get an interview. So the idea that these jobs, I don't know who's creating them. Like I said, I suspect a lot of them are jobs that were closed down and they're coming back. Or they're, you know, minimum wage jobs and, you know, they don't pay anything. But the idea, and this is to, it was the, you know, one of the messages of Survival Riches is that the people, the elite, have taken all the wealth. The system is rigged in their favor, but they're not satisfied with that. It's one of the greatest things Tui Long said. You know, he said, it's not enough, you know, they don't just want everything. They want to know that you don't have it.
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about. It's like demeaning people, and that's why, you know, they're only doing the jobs Americans won't do. That kind of philosophy. You want to work, you can go out and get a job. This is to demean people and make them feel even worse about their situation, that they can't get even the crappiest of jobs. And when these statistics come out, it's horrible because the Republicans certainly, I don't know, counter. Usually the other party tries to counter it. But of course, when they get it, then they're great. The same stupid numbers are completely true. But I saw that. And it's absolutely hilarious to see it. But anybody who's out in this economy understands it, especially after this lockdown. You shut down untold numbers of small businesses. Whoever's creating these jobs, they're not. If you talk to people that aren't economists, you talk to average people that are out there trying to get a job, like that guy in Florida. Ask people like that about what the reality is out there. It's a horrible job market. It's been that way for a long time, and it's not going to. They're propping it up by these absurd, phony numbers.
Right. And listen, if you're making $27,000 in New York, you're homeless.
Yeah.
Okay, unless you live with your mom.
Yes.
Yep. Right. Because otherwise it's not working.
Yep.
You're homeless. Across the nation, it may be a little different depending on where you are, but it's still not a lot of money. That's not a lot of money. That's not. Regardless. What's up, Tone? What are you thinking? I tend to agree with Don here. Like I go to these places. I see these help wanted signs. You know, they're freaking part time jobs. You know, they're like, the bare minimum jobs, you know, minimum wage, and they're touting that as being a good thing. Oh, people are hiring. You know, what's that going to do? Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, let me pose the question. If you are firing someone because they won't take the Trump juice injection, if you're firing someone for that and then you post a job opening, are you a job creator?
Oh.
Think about that. The millions and millions and millions of people who have been told that they're no longer welcome because they won't take an experimental injection. Matter of fact, Mr. Anderson, who's with me right now. Mr. Anderson has been told that. My good friend who is with me on this journey. He's a scientist, by the way. And he's respecting science because he has COVID antibodies. Mm. He's like, I don't need the Trump juice. And they care about what you think.
So, you know what they're saying now. And I forgot to bring this up. I think I saw this last week or the week before, that the vaccine is actually stronger than natural immunity. That's the newest thing that's out
that's
there.
That's never happened. That's not
never in never, the history of anything. So either that proves one of two things: A, they're lying, or two, this is a chimeric virus that we've never seen before. Maybe it's a combination of both. But they're saying, hey, that the vaccine is more powerful than natural immunity. Now, this is what the mainstream is putting out there. Go ahead, Tom, finish up.
Well, yeah, just to go back to the jobs point, I mean, you millions of people losing their job and then they post an opening. Again, is that signs of a vibrant economy?
No.
Folks, we know when we're in a pandemic because we'll go outside and we'll see people sick. We know people in our family are sick. We know what's happening. We can see it with our own eyes. They don't need a propaganda campaign. CNN doesn't have to tell us if we know that something's going around that's really deadly, right? We said that in 2020 when we're all going, what are you talking about? You know? Right. And so the same thing is true with the economy. We know when we're in a strong economy, everyone right now can go into a store and start seeing the holes in the shelves, the supply chain. They see the prices increasing. People see the fees going up everywhere. Inflation is here. Everyone knows this. And now you can be a partisan hack in either party. And look, Trump said that he had the greatest economy in the history of the United States, which is absolute bullshit. I mean, all it was built on a total mountain of debt, right? We keep printing, and not creating anything. We become a consumption economy. Everyone knows when there's a strong economy, there's job opening, there's living wages being paid. Like you're going to be able to you have strength in that job to be able to buy a home and live comfortably. That's the declining middle class that we've been seeing since the 1970s. And so all of this is built on lies, and everybody knows when there's a strong economy, and we don't have one now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. We don't have one. And I think we're going to see it come December, unless they doctor the numbers, which is very possible, because I think this is what they're doing now just to change perception, this is going to be a really bad Christmas for a lot of people. You know, it's going to be a bad Thanksgiving for a lot of people. Not too long ago, you're saying it's going to be the most expensive Thanksgiving ever in the history of Thanksgiving. But now you're saying, oh, everybody's getting jobs. It's a job-a-rama. Boy, we're handing them out like nobody's business. I don't believe it. And even if they are, Tone made an excellent point. How many of these jobs are just filling in for people that got fired because they didn't want to take this experimental vaccine, right?
Once again, America Unplugs doing the job of the mainstream media, asking a simple question. No one is ever going to bring that up in a press conference.
Right, no,
like, hey, you fired millions of people. Right. And then when you put a posting up, are you a job creator? No one's ever going to ask that.
No, nobody's ever going to ask that. My family just walked in and they saw the dog on the couch. So probably that's why they were screaming right now. If you guys heard that. Huh? Yeah, Apollo. A bad boy, man. Yeah. Let me tell you. Gonna get him neutered in about a week.
I got my dog Beans is here with me on.
You brought Beans with you.
Beans the Brave is here. You want to get a good shot of Beans?
Yeah, man. Let's see Beans, man.
All right, I'm gonna go get her.
Beans has traveled more places than most Americans. We're gonna get into that in a second. Hold on for a second. Let's see Beans the Brave.
Yeah.
Here he comes. There he goes. Look
Beans
at that.
About to make That's his Beans. TV. Oh, right on.
A real American Beans the Brave, ladies and gents, on camera. America Unplugged.
This is a America Unplugged exclusive. This is Beans the Brave, ladies and gentlemen. She is a 13-pound Chihuahua mix from the mean streets of San Antonio.
Fantastic. I was just telling Don that Beans has traveled more places than most Americans.
That's true.
So there's this article that came out, and I want to talk about it real quick before we move on to religious exemptions and the vaccine. It says that 1 in 6 Americans have never left their home state. You know, and that is you can find this on Drudge. That is key. 1 in 6 Americans have never left their home state. So if they've never left their home state, they're lacking in experience. They're lacking in seeing things around the world that are different. They're in their own bubble. A lot of these people don't have a choice, of course. They don't have the money to go anywhere, you know. But travel changes things for people. It changes perception. It allows you to look at things differently. You know, I've been fortunate enough to travel some places. Tone goes everywhere all the time. I don't know how, if Don has been, I'm pretty sure Don has been around. But I've gone a little bit. I've never been to Europe. I'm trying to get my ass over there. But it's very important to go out and take a look at how other people. I'll tell you one story before I pass it to Don. I went to Mexico. I went to what's it called? I forget the place. It's a very touristy down south of Mexico. What's that?
What was Cancun?
Cancun. I went to Cancun.
Cancun.
Right. I went out there. Right. And it was fantastic. Right. I was in a resort, the whole deal. Right. Then I took a bus to go to Chichen Itza because I wanted to go see the pyramid, you know, the Chichen Itza pyramid site. And I made it out there. It was incredible. I got to swim in a cenote and the whole deal. Right. It was dope. It really was. On the way there, I saw the most poverty I've ever seen in my life. And I went to Honduras for 3 months. Okay. Like that was a thing. Like half of my family's from Honduras, and that is a third world country. And that is poverty out there for real, you know, but I had never seen anything like I saw on my way to Chichen Itza. It changes perception. Like people are out there. Like it made me feel guilty for being in that country, in that resort with these people servicing me. And then they go back to living in their shacks. You know, I was like, oh my God, like, what am I doing here? Like it's, anyway, it's good to get out and take a look. Don, I'm throwing it to you. What's up?
Well, I wish I had known that stat. That only, I mean, that's most of who do in anybody circle, family and friends. Do you know anybody that hasn't been outside their state? I don't. I mean, that's a shocking statistic. But again, that's because I'm hanging on to what's left of the middle class, the lower level to the middle class. And, you know, that's where most of us, I guess, are. That are. I mean, if we're even on these kind of platforms, we have enough affluence to be able to do that. But we have to keep in mind, again, that bottom half of America is like 27,000, especially when you go into, like Appalachia, the city until the Kennedys visited there. Awful poverty we can't even imagine. Obviously, the inner city, trailer parks, things like that, housing projects. Who knows how many millions and millions and millions of people are mired in that existence. And you talk about living the paycheck to paycheck, many of them don't have paychecks.
Right.
So they're living whatever sustenance from the government. The government doesn't pay for vacations. And I point out that, you know, it wasn't this way for the middle class. So because of pressure like from people like Huey Long, my great hero, who wanted more. He wanted everybody to have a month vacation, every worker. You know, he wanted a 30-hour work week, maybe a 20-hour work week back in the 1930s, and he wanted a guaranteed month vacation for everybody. Because at that time, like, you know, my grandparents never took vacations, ever. Yeah. And I'm sure that was for most people, because they didn't, first of all, very few people flew back then. Very few people could afford an ocean liner. So maybe like a they didn't even do that. It was a big thing. I remember I heard a story of a grandmother who lived in Washington, D.C. It was a huge thing when she went to Baltimore for the day. It was like a highlight of her life. And that was the way it was for most people who were lower middle class or poor. Until 98 freed all that up, because it started giving workers some benefits. And one of those benefits was sick and vacation time. You also couldn't call in sick back then. You know, that was, you know, you worked on, my grandfather died, worked until 2 weeks before he died. And that was very common back then. You had to keep making money for your family. You didn't have sick pay. And so thanks to that 1938 legislation, that's when overtime was created, the concept of overtime for work. Pensions became prevalent in the workforce. But of course, we're losing a lot of that. But people don't realize what it was like before then. So when you see pictures of old photographs of like the Eastern Shore, or you know, people going to the beach, all those people were upper class. Nobody, I mean, generations, I don't think my grandparents, I doubt they ever saw the ocean. You had generations and generations of people that died without ever seeing the ocean. Well, anything else. And so what tells me is that apparently there's a huge number, 1 in 6. That's astounding.
That's a lot.
That have not been outside their state. I can't even imagine that. But I mean, but again, that shows you again, this is tied in. I don't think it's, I mean, I don't like to travel very much, but I've managed to go to Disney World 3 times, and I've been on it. I mean, all this stuff, you know, for my kids, because I'm not much of a traveler, but, you know, we went to the beach almost every year, Nagthead and places like that. But, you know, people that don't have the opportunity to do that because, you know, we have a lot of extra cash, but we had enough to be able to afford little vacations like that. You know, we couldn't take, a cruise through Europe or anything like that, but you were able to go to the Bahamas once. And but most people can't. Obviously, 1 in 6 Americans can't do that. And that's a shameful indictment. But again, it ties in everything I wrote about in Survival of the Richest. And I wish I'd thought of it, which I'd been talking to you back then, Billy, because if I had had that statistic, I would have made a lot about that and talked about how so few Americans had the chance. But, you know, we may all be coming to that point now.
Because oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Vaccinated. Yeah. Right. That 1 in 6 is probably because we would be to the point where, you know, we will no longer be able to go outside the state. We'll be lucky we can go outside our home, I guess. But they want to try to restrict people travel. That's why you see such a push, I think, to try to stop people having their own automobiles. Yeah, well, they don't like the idea of you to have any.
Right.
Yeah, they want you. They don't want you to get away from it, and they want to be able to monitor you all the time. But that's really sad. Right. And people, I've heard people comment about it, but I don't think you're going to. But I mean, to know that, because that's not even travel. I live in the Washington D.C. area, and I can't imagine people never been to Maryland, which is right next to me. You know, to Virginia. I mean, I that's just the concept is foreign to me. But not, I guess maybe, you know, big states, California. Maybe I guess it's possible, big state. But it's and again, it goes to what Huey Long was talking about long ago. We all need leisure time, and no matter what you want to do, a lot of people like me that don't really like to travel, but you should be able to, you know, to be able to relax in your own fashion. Certainly, if you want to travel and see the state next to you, you ought to be able to do that. And I doubt very many people are mired in their own state because that's the way they want it.
No, it's expensive to fly over to California, you know, if you're on the East Coast. You know, it's. Luckily, my corporate job flew me all over the United States, and I got to see a lot of things as a result. You know, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to travel even outside of that. Thank the Lord. You know, but it's expensive, so I can understand that somebody's never been to the West Coast. It's funny that you say that because one of the first things I did when I got over to the West Coast was go to the Pacific Ocean. Like I wanted to see it, you know, and I wanted to.
Sure.
Put my hand in the Pacific Ocean, you know, and just chill, you know. And I've been to California 3 times already. So I went to LA and San Francisco. And when I went up to San Francisco recently, a couple of months ago, I went back to the ocean, you know, and I'm like, and I told my mom, I'm like, yo, Japan is right over there because my mom came with me. You know, it was cool, you know, just to sit and look and experience, you know, and you know, so and you see things differently. Like I started seeing differences between the way the corporate media, in particular the right, paints San Francisco. And while some of it is true, a lot of it is not. You know, like, so, but I had to experience that myself because I thought for a fact I would see crap on every corner. You know, I thought it was going to be that bad. It's not. You go to some areas and yeah, but you come to some areas in the Bronx and you're going to find some real, real tough shit, right? Even in Manhattan, you know, anywhere in New York City or anywhere, I guess, you're going to find that place. So San Francisco's kind of like that, but I thought it was a charming city. I had a lot of fun there. You know, it looked very cool. It wasn't what I was expecting through the mainstream media. And this is what I mean. Like, I think the mainstream media takes advantage of stats like that. They know full well that people haven't gone or won't go, and they'll just believe, you know. And I think that's the biggest thing I want to take out of that is, like, if you can go, go. Make an effort to go. And I know that's a lot easier said than done, you know, but we can't believe what the mainstream media is telling us. I got hit up by my boy, shouts to Wayne McCroy, hit me up the other day, and he's like, hey, I hear that in New York there's nothing on the shelves. He's like, is this true? And I'm like, well, not exactly, you know. Like, I started going around and I even took pictures, right? Like, well, they were talking about Walgreens and CVS. Nothing. So I have a Walgreens and CVS right, like, literally blocks away, right? So I went to both. And while there are areas that aren't filled that typically would be filled, you could still find a lot of stuff in that store, right? By the way, that's changing, okay? Because it's less and less with time now that I keep going over there. But at the time when he hit me up, I was like, well, there's still a fair amount of stuff here. So it's not completely empty, but there are some things that we just can't get. And now, that was about two, three weeks ago. And now when I go into the pet shop, they start telling me, hey, we don't have this. We can't get it. We're waiting for it. Or we don't have this. You know, we don't have, I went to get some wee-wee pads. They did not have them. And she straight up told me, she was like, we just can't get our hands on them right now. You know, and so there's a lot of places that are doing that, you know. So it's real, but the mainstream media paints a picture. Like, let's look at one more thing, and then I'll throw it to Tone. Let's look at the empty hospital during the pandemic. And now you start reading some of these articles, and they start telling you, listen, it was most of the hospitals were empty. They were empty. I was shocked when I read this. It was an article on Drudge. They were like, they were empty with the exception of some places in New York. And I remember saying that. I was like, listen, I live in a hospital not too far from, I live close to a hospital not too far from here. And there's no one there. No one. Remember, Don, I was jogging.
Absolutely.
And I took pictures of it and sent them to you. I was like, look, there's nothing here. Dude,
the video. It
was like The Walking Dead. You know, it literally was The Walking Dead. But if you hopped over to freaking Queens, you know, and I know somebody that worked there. Two people actually that worked in the hospital in Queens, one of them being a doctor, the other guy was an administrative person. It was overflowing. Like, they thought it was Armageddon, you know, because it was that bad. But it was in one particular area, and the mainstream media took that and blew it up and said, everywhere, look at what's going on. This is everywhere throughout the United States, you know, and that's where the whole thing started, because of this exaggerated reporting by the media. Go ahead, Tone. What's up, man?
Well, I find it interesting that we as a country went from Eisenhower's infrastructure plan in the 50s that gave us the interstates to Pothole Pete Buttigieg, you know, from South Bend, Indiana, right? That was what he was, Mayor Pete. They called him Pothole Pete. And he's the transportation secretary that doesn't want you to go anywhere. You know, my grandmother's generation, you know, you look back and you see that they were, were the generation that said that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, right? And after World War II, it was the Americans were on the open road. That was the meme of the time. Like, everybody has a, you know, an RV, and everybody's going out. We're going to search in search of the American dream, which is the open road, which is freedom, which is expansive. And we went from that to stay home, stay safe. Mm. You know, so think of the dichotomy there, right? The opposing viewpoints, and I think the plan is working. You know, the Davos set, the Agenda 2030 people want us in a collective hive. You know, they want us in these smart cities, these technocratic prisons. They want you believing in overpopulation, because if you're stuck in a major city and you've never gone out to the and drove through, like what we drove through, yes, with national parks in New Mexico, where there's not another car for 30 minutes. You think that there's way too many people,
right? You believe
by design. That's because that's what you perceive, right? And so you're told, stay home, stay safe, get back in your pod and eat your bugs, because Klaus Schwab, you know, Klaus wants you to do that. and I think that's the issue. And I'm sad for my country, and I'm sad for the civilization. We're missing so much, and I try to travel as much as I can. I don't get out as well. Every time I talk to you, somehow I'm on the road, right? But I know that seems like, but I go down to the trading floor in Dallas, and I like to get out and like to see stuff. But I think more Americans need to. You open up your perceptions. I mean, I wouldn't be the person that I am today without my time overseas.
Right.
For good or for ill, right?
Right. Well, understood 100, Ben. You know, I've never been overseas, but I've been up and down North and South America. So, I mean, there's still more to do, of course. This is two very huge continents, but I've done Central, I've done North, every country in North America, and I've done some countries in South America. In the States, Maine is beautiful. Go out to Maine if you like to chill, and it's cold up there, but if you like to just chill, I loved Maine. I got to see Canada right across. You know, it was dope. I went to Toronto. Toronto's dope. Ontario is dope. What else? Florida is my home away from home. I love Florida. Love it. Virginia is very chill. California is dope. New Orleans is fantastic. You know, and you're going to see things over there. I saw things in New Orleans. When I went to New Orleans, I saw a young kid, snatch a purse from a woman and take off like nobody's business. Like he just took it and you were not finding him. That's it. He just disappeared. Like these people got it down, but they have to do that. For a little kid to be snatching purses, you know, it's because they don't have the means. So they got to survive somehow. So that's what they're doing. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying there are conditions that push people to do things like this. So yeah, you will find the good, the bad, and the ugly, but it will open up your eyes and it will expose you to new people. And you'll see things in a different way. I love meeting new people. It's fantastic. So I would encourage everybody to get out there and travel if you can. And travel before Joe Biden, because I believe it's going to be Biden that does it, man. Maybe Trump will win again. I highly doubt it, but maybe he'll win again and he'll do it. I really hope that's the case at this point. I hope Trump wins again, and I hope he does this shit so I could get everybody to shut the fuck up about this, right? But somebody is going to implement, that you have to show your papers for interstate travel.
Right?
Yeah. They've been pushing this. The Biden administration has been thinking about this openly. And then there'll be
new job openings because you can't get to your job. So we'll have a thriving economy.
Right. That's right.
We had to destroy the village in order to save it. I'm gonna hop off the stream real quick. I'm gonna see if I can reconnect so I can give you guys a picture view of see if we can get Bill Cooper's little mountain in the back view. I told my wife I'd at least try. So
go ahead and do it
for the audience. I'll be right back.
Don and I got this for a bit. Yo, what's up, Gammy? I see you in the chat. How you doing, brother? And everybody else that's watching, we appreciate you. I'm if you make me laugh, I'm going to start coughing, you know, so I'm trying not to laugh, but I feel it right here already, you know, so I might cough a little bit. Anyway, Don, let me talk to you about this, man. The Air Force, they decided that, well, this is what I'm reading. This is the headline that I'm reading, that nobody in the Air Force got granted a religious exemption. This is crazy. What are you thinking about this?
Well, you know, I think I'm surprised there are any religious exemptions left at all, because America is increasingly turning into a non-religious nation. I don't know what the polls show, but I guess a majority would still say they believe in God, but I don't think it's that substantial a majority anymore. Whereas if you back, say the 1950s, you probably would have had like a 99% or something that said they believe in God. Now I'm sure it's significantly lower than that. That's why the same problem we have with trying to defend the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights were, you know, they came, these are rights that are, you have God-given rights, we call them. You're born with them by grace of God. Well, if you don't believe in God, as millions of Americans don't, why would you have respect for a concept like that? What are you talking about? They don't even understand that, so it doesn't mean anything to them. I think that religious exemptions are going to be the kinds of exemptions that matter the least now, because maybe you want to try a tact of doing it on a scientific, science is becoming the new state religion.
New religion, yeah.
I would say, try that. Just say, hey, I want a scientific objection. I don't think science here is right. Maybe you'd have a better chance, because religious exemption, again, the people that are in positions of power to give you that probably don't, aren't very religious. So, oh, wow, there is.
There's Mr. Atterburn right now, there's walking Tony outside in Zona.
Okay, I want a scientific exemption. What's up, Tom? Off in the distance there.
We see that little
mountain right past that flagpole.
Right.
Dope. Right up there on that hill. That is 96 North Clearview Circle.
Fantastic.
Former residence of Milton William Cooper.
Wow. Wow. And you're going up to the graves today.
Who lives there now?
Of the town there.
Yeah, who lives there now?
I'm not sure. I know you told me to go knock on the door, but I decided against it.
Okay, I'll do it for you. I went to Yale, and I walked right up to the tomb and knocked on the door. And nobody opened. But still, I still did it. I wasn't expecting anything, but whatever. What's up, Tom?
Well, I went through, I think there's logic in that. And I thought, one of two things is going to happen. Either they're going to be like, yeah, it's cool. Or yeah, I don't want my house in any of your broadcasts. And I'm like, oh, right. So should I just, I got my broadcast done yesterday and I may still go back up. I may still follow your advice, Billy. You always have some good advice. So we'll see.
Just, you know, don't bring a camera up there. I mean, it's not, you know, just do it for your own thing. Like, I mean, I wouldn't bring a camera up there. I just do it for my own, you know, and see who's there and be like, oh, you know. This used to be
because the odds are, if they live in that, they probably have heard about what happened there. I would think. I don't know how you could not know that. So they would. I wouldn't imagine they would just despise a guy and want to. I don't know. They'd live in a place that. Who knows? Maybe it's might even be some Bill Cooper fans that wanted to buy the house because it was his house. You don't know.
Mm-hmm. Which is dope, you know. So I mean, I would do it. If you don't do it, I understand 100% though, Tone. It may not be the smartest thing to do, but I was down there, I would do it, you know, just because, you know, and I would really love to go to his grave, and you're going to do that today. So send me pics, please. That would be really, really dope. Hey, it's America Unplugged. We're fading out, okay? Because otherwise I'm going to have a cough attack because I know Tony's going to say something funny and I'm not going to be able to contain myself. All right, Mr. Atterburn, tell the people where they can find you.
You find me at atterburn.news or wisewolf.gold.
All right. Don Jeffries, what's up, brother?
You got Donald Jeffries News, Donald Jeffries.media, and my books are out there. The Donald Jeffries Show is every Wednesday, 6 to 8 on Hotelly.com. Starting next Friday, right, I'm going to have the new iProtest show is moving over to Aftermath.fm, and Billy Ray coach me on that like he coached me. Yeah, so that we'll be doing that. And my book, On Borrowed Fame, about showbiz, that's out. It could be out today. It's going to be out any day. It's already on the publisher's website, so I'll be promoting that quick.
Fantastic. Don't forget Aftermath.fm right here where you're listening to America Unplugged. Don Jeffries, Fridays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern. And Mr. Atterburn, if you want to continue to open up for him, that's available for you too. Let me show you guys, since we're showing pets, let me show you guys Zeus, since he's been terrorizing my broadcast.
Oh wow, cool! There you go.
He's always here. Always. Well,
I get my crazy golden retriever. She's around Riley, but she's upstairs now. She has been hanging down here with me lately. But she's I call her. I think she's got doggy autism or something. She's a challenge, but she's beautiful.
It's very possible. I know she's beautiful too. All right, guys, thank you for tuning in this week. We will see you next week, Lord willing. Take it easy now. Bye bye.